Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the FPC Raiders Podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Figgs. As we know, the Raiders have still work to do. After an embarrassing loss in Foxborough, they will line up against the Buffalo Bills. Now, I'm a little older than some of y'all listening, and I remember the Bills being, when I was in high school, the dominant AFC team where they ran through everyone. That offense was unstoppable, and that defense shut everyone down. It has been a while since they've been this consistently good, but here to break it all down is our guy, Brad Gelber from the Bills Wire. Good afternoon, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Now, Brad, first we need to kind of talk about an overarching issue where news came out that Derek Carr, Darren Waller, and a bunch of Raiders attended a charity function maskless, and there were tweets back and forth from, I think, a Bills player and a couple of people in NFL media saying how they're a little concerned. This raises red flags. What do you think the mood is of the team? And personally, would you be concerned about aligning up across from a player that may have been exposed?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Obviously, you know, it's an interesting time for the NFL right now, given that we saw our first real kind of outbreak this week regarding the Titans, and now their game's going to have to be postponed. They're moving it off of this week completely. So I think flags are kind of raised higher even just when you have something like that going on. I think the player you're referencing is actually Tre'Davious White, who's, you know, obviously pretty well known around the league, one of the, you know, premier cornerbacks in the league. He was asked about it, I think particularly because he almost didn't even play this season. He was one of the players that was contemplating taking the opt-out, decided to suit up in the end, and, you know, so here he is. And, you know, he was asked about it, and he said basically antennas were raised, I believe was the term he used when asked about, you know, the fact that the Raiders had this incident regarding not wearing masks. And then, oh, yeah, the week after the Bills play the Raiders, they're scheduled to play the Titans. So that's 2 weeks in a row where there's kind of some news surrounding, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic possibly impacting teams that the Bills are facing. You know, it's hard to say where these guys are at with this stuff. I mean, I know testing has been, you know, great overall in the NFL, and it's one of the reasons they've been able to have a season to this point. And I think it's shows that it's working, the fact that they were able to catch what's going on with the Titans and they're going to move the game. So that's obviously an important note there. And obviously the Raiders are being tested as well. So I don't think there's a level of concern that, you know, the players would want to like boycott the game or anything crazy like that. But I'm sure there's just, I think more what Tre'Davious was saying was that there needs to be a sense of responsibility or a sense of, you know, you owe it to more than just yourself. You owe it to your teammates, you owe it to their families, you owe it to the organization as a whole to, you know, take care of yourself and take the proper steps to protect yourself when you're not in the facility and you're not in games. So I think that's more along the lines of what he was getting at there. And, you know, so I think at this point it's kind of just a wait and see type of thing. But I think with the way the testing has gone throughout the NFL, I think the players believe in that, and they, you know, or else they wouldn't have agreed to play this season.
We're talking with Brad Gelber from the Bills Wire. Brad, it is weird because when you look at the matchup of the quarterbacks or the comparison, you have, I wrote today on FPC Raiders that, as a longtime fan of the Raiders and follower of the Raiders, I see traits of John Elway in Josh Allen. I'm not saying he's going to be Elway. I'm not saying he's an Elway career, but I see traits. And this year has been pretty much the coming out party. Josh Allen was picked 7th, 2018. You see a gradual, actually not even gradual, you see an expedited improvement. Like, where do you think the point of his rapid improvement began?
Yeah, that's a good a good point there. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, John Gruden said the same thing regarding kind of comparing similarities with John Elway as well this week. I know Gruden was very high on Josh Allen when he was asked about him during his media availability this week. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing with Josh Allen, right? He's one of the most polarizing players I've ever seen, that I've ever covered. You know, people had a preconceived notion of who he was and who he was going to be when he was drafted out of Wyoming. I can tell you right now, here in Buffalo, myself included, I did not want the Bills to draft Josh Allen. I was in this mindset where this franchise has gone so many years at the time. You know, they had finally broken the playoff drought. But it was on kind of a lot of help they needed, and it was a wild card berth that didn't go anywhere. So it was more of just a symbol of making the playoffs than it was they actually had a true contender of a team at the time. But this team had not had a true franchise quarterback since the team you mentioned at the beginning with Jim Kelly. And there had just been so many attempts to find that quarterback that I did not want them taking the risk on a guy like Josh Allen, where anytime you hear high upside, that's a little scary to a team, because there's a good chance that perhaps he doesn't hit that upside, and then you have another, you know, quote unquote bust as your quarterback. So yeah, at the time, I know a lot of people in Buffalo were kind of upset when the Bills went in that direction and drafted him. But quickly, you just, as you got to know the player and you heard him speak, and, you know, he said all the right things, he was doing all the right things, humble kid, clearly had the physical tools. No one questioned that. I mean, we all know he has a huge arm. That's been kind of the thing with Josh Allen, you know, from, I believe, even prior to his college days. He's just always had a really big arm. So the thing everyone kind of dwelled on was the accuracy issues, and could he ever improve his accuracy? And, you know, that's been hyped up in the media the 3 years Josh has been in the NFL. National media loves to, you know, poke fun at this guy. And in a sense, I said this before, I think the treatment he's received on the national, you know, stage has caused Bills fans to like him even more, because he's become kind of one of our own here. It's, you know, it's almost this protection thing where anytime anyone says anything negative about Josh Allen, even if it's fair criticism, you know, the claws are out and people feel like they have to protect their quarterback. So, you know, at his rookie year, certainly the plan was kind of put out of order, I think, a little bit when the Bills decided to go with now Raiders quarterback Nathan Peterman. And I think we're all pretty much aware of how that story went. You know, one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life with the first half interceptions, and things just went off the tracks there. And they were forced, you know, quickly. They had traded A.J. McCarron in the offseason because Peterman looked so good in the preseason. Josh was the only other option. So he had to go in much, much quicker than I think anyone had hoped for. And it was kind of just trial by fire. At the time, the Bills' offensive line was a disaster. They did not have any real receivers. Their number one receiver was Kelvin Benjamin at the time. Things were just not good on offense, and that was by design. You know, when Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean came in here, and I know, I'm sure we'll get to that in a little bit here, but when they came in here, the plan was, as Sean's a defensive-minded coach, let's make sure the defense is solidified and on the right page, and then we'll address the offense. So Josh was kind of thrown in there his rookie season, and you know, he played better than I think a lot of people expected. I think his athletic nature and his mobile presence there allowed him to make up for having a bad offensive line, because he was able to get out of the pocket and basically just run for his life. But there was a lot to be desired in terms of the passing game as a whole. You know, last year he took a real big step forward. Still a lot of critics of his game, still a lot of people really dwelling again on the accuracy and more particularly the downfield accuracy. So middle, you know, mid-range stuff, short game stuff was better. Long range, he was still having a lot of issues hitting receivers, missing wide open receivers, overthrowing them. Again, something that they felt they still needed to address. He needed to grow. But then in the offseason, they made the big trade for Stephon Diggs, who has just made a world of a difference in the locker room, on the field. him and Josh have developed such a rapport already, only a few games in, and that's been evident in Stefan's numbers and Josh's numbers. But Josh has really been on point to this, as you've already said, even with his downfield stuff. Overall, he has, you know, a 71% completion percentage. He has one of the highest passer ratings on deep balls this season. He's just been electric overall. So you've seen the gradual improvement each year. You've seen phases of the game he's worked on. He continues to work with, you know, quarterback guru Jordan Palmer in the offseason, who he's worked with since he was drafted. And Jordan's had a lot of great things to say about his development as well. So you definitely see it incrementally if you follow this team or you cover this team, but maybe from an outsider's perspective, it feels like, holy cow, like Josh Allen's arrived. And he certainly, don't get me wrong, he certainly has played even beyond, I think, where some of us thought he might be this early in the season, especially given the fact there was no preseason and it was a weird, you know, training camp and off season with all the COVID-19 stuff going on. But, you know, they've really, this offense has come out of the gate swinging. And I think, you know, people in Buffalo are loving it because while the defense hasn't played up to par so far the first few weeks, it's been a long, long time, like you said already, since Buffalo's had any sort of offense that they could hang their head on.
Now, when I dive into the numbers, I look at the fact that over the first two seasons in Buffalo for Josh Allen, teammates dropped 49 passes. That is ungodly a lot within pretty much 27 games. And also his on target, which are the passes that hit the target either within stride or in their hands, it has jumped from 73.2 last year, which people, you know, that's astounding, to 83%. That means his passes are not only in rhythm, they're on target, and you can turn up field and get those yards after catch if they're a shorter one. Now, Brad, when we come back from break, I want to talk about the offense kind of trying to break it down between the run game and the receivers. That's after break. You are listening to the FBC Raiders podcast on the Full Press Coverage Radio Network. We are back with the FBC Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Brad Gilbert from the Bills Wire. Brad, we went to break and I explained how Josh Allen has crafted himself a great start to the season. Now, when you look at the Bills' offense, it is stunning. 31 points a game. This is like I said, we talked about it earlier. I haven't seen these numbers since the old K-Gun offense with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas, Kenneth Davis, folks like that. And I want to talk about the running game because not just Allen, who can get on the outside. He breaks contain, even though he's 237 pounds. He runs with purpose. Behind that, you have, I know he was injured, but Zach Moss and a Devin Singletary. Can you explain what that backfield does as far as potential problems that the Raiders defensive line, who was, they were just gashed for 251 yards versus the Patriots, what problems that backfield will bring to the Raiders on Sunday?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, obviously, as you already mentioned, Josh is more than capable of running. That's kind of what he was known for early on, his rookie year and then last year again. This year, he's been running. I mean, the first game, he ran a lot versus the New York Jets, but that was kind of because of the opportunity was there. Second week versus Miami, he ran a little less, and last week as well. Versus the Rams. So we've seen him really just concentrate a little more on throwing the ball. With the backfield, the way last season, you know, was Devin Singletary's rookie year, and at the time they had Frank Gore, who was quote-unquote the lead back, although him and Singletary split carries, and then throughout the year as Gore kind of regressed a bit, Singletary basically took over the lead back role and played very well, especially for a rookie, smaller back, extremely elusive. He had a run last week where he basically just planted in the ground and completely just juked a defender. It looked like he broke his ankles. I mean, it was on all the highlight, you know, reels and everything. But that's the type of runner Devin Singletary is. He's just extremely hard. He's slippery. You know, he doesn't have that next level speed where he'll just completely outrun you, but he's so deceptive in how he runs and he's fast enough that it's hard to stop him. And as you mentioned, they drafted this season a complement to him and Zach Moss, who is a very physical, in your face runner, very powerful runner, strong back. So a really nice complement 1-2 punch with Singletary. And Moss, and then, you know, as you said, Moss was hurt last week, so they had to end up going with TJ Yeldon, who's been on the roster for a few years, and people might, you know, remember that name from his time back in Houston and some of his other stops. But he's done with the Bills for a while now, but it looks like Moss is going to be back this week. So, yeah, they have a really nice complement on paper. They just haven't really been able to get the run game going this season so far. And again, when you have this many playmakers, I mean, the Bills' wide receiving core is definitely one of the, I'd say, tops in the NFL. You know, behind Stephon Diggs, they have John Brown, who is questionable this week with a calf injury. He missed most of last game. So that's a guy that is good to look out for if he's going to be able to suit up or not. But they have John Brown. They have Cole Beasley. You know, one of the, you know, top slot receivers in the league. They have a rookie wide receiver, Gabriel Davis, out of UCF, who's been fantastic so far. I wrote a piece on him last week. He's just been extremely impressive for a rookie that they were able to draft in the fourth round. I find he's been one of the biggest steals to me of the draft so far. But they have a really nice receiving core there. Plus, they have their tight ends and Dawson Knox and Tyler Croft. So they have a lot of receivers plus Josh running the ball that there's not always the opportunity to have, you know, a high, you know, number of runs for the running backs. I know they want to get them more involved, and I think it's something they're hoping to do, and they clearly have the talent to do it. It's just about facing a defense that allows them that opportunity. And as you said, it appeared to me last week, the Raiders, one of the issues they had with their game was they focused so much on Cam Newton running the ball, and it appeared they were able to kind of contain him, that they allowed the running backs to just break wide open. So, you know, they now a week later they have to face a Bills team who poses a similar threat with, you know, Josh Allen running, or do they kind of focus more on the running back? So it'll be interesting to see how the Raiders handle that. I know they're an aggressive defense. It looks like sometimes perhaps they over-pursue on the ball, and that causes them to miss tackles and things of that nature. So, you know, I'm interested to see the Bills' offensive game plan because I made note of this last week. Feels like each of the three games they've had this far, they've had basically a different focal point on how they were going to attack the defenses. So, you know, when you have that much versatility in your offense, it makes it really hard to game plan for a defense, which I think is partially why they've been this successful on offense so far. So they definitely have the ability to have a strong running game, but they just haven't, you know, had, I guess, that opportunity to really put it together so far this season.
One of the things that we will definitely talk about Stephon Diggs in a second, but you mentioned Gabriel Davis, a rookie out of UCF. I remember him in college where they were playing Stanford, and they have a running back. They have a cornerback named Paulson Adebo. He was supposed to be a first-round draft pick. If you look at the film, Gabe Davis pretty much forced the guy's hand into going back to school, and that film was that bad. He is a long strider. He's a big target, but he has deceptive speed. And so far, if John Brown is unable to go, Davis seemed like he would be the perfect complement to Diggs because they can – I mean, it just the size advantage. Plus, they're playing a defense in the Raiders where they will be missing one of their starters, Darren Arnett. He broke his hand in the preseason and he aggravated with an awkward fall last week. So he's seeing a specialist. So his status is up in the air. Behind him, you have Nevin Lawson, who is He's been in the league, I think, 5 years, not one interception. So it's they have struggles in the defensive backfield as far as being a cover, and this is a point of contention. Speaking of, Stephon Diggs gives Josh Allen his go-to, his compliment. What has he meant, not just on the field, but off the field, in the ever-growing confidence that you see Allen each Sunday?
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, contextualize what he's meant for this team overall. You know, I know coming out of Minnesota, the way things ended there, and, you know, whether you're a Vikings fan or you just followed the team loosely or however, you know, there was a lot of people who thought that Diggs's exit there kind of marked him as, you know, a quote-unquote diva. And, you know, he obviously didn't always get along with Kirk Cousins there. And I think we're seeing just how much this Vikings team misses Diggs right now in terms of their 0-3 start and the offense just completely falling off the tracks here. So I think we knew how important Diggs was to that team, but I think it's just shown it even more with you know, on paper, kind of how the two seasons have gone in Buffalo versus Minnesota. Not that there's not a lot more to it than that, but I think it certainly speaks to it. But since the moment Diggs got here, I mean, he's just been nothing but, you know, a consummate professional, perfect teammate. You know, him and Allen, it was, again, a weird off season where you really couldn't get together with your teammates the same way maybe you would in other years. But I know him and Josh were, you know, video chatting and texting and playing, you know, video games together and all that stuff, just to build an off-field relationship, which maybe some people roll their eyes at and think that stuff doesn't matter. But I think it 100% matters, and I think it's shown, you know, since they've actually physically been together this year, they've become, you know, seemingly good friends. I mean, they share stuff of each other on social media all the time. They're together in the locker room. You know, they joke around. There's just it's a feel-good relationship, which is important anytime you have a young quarterback and, you know, a star wide receiver. So I think that stuff matters a lot. I think he's been great in the locker room. One of the things he's pointed out numerous times and the media's pointed out is just how unselfish Diggs has been. I mean, he's just been so supportive of his other wide receivers in the room, whether it's Cole, whether it's John, whether it's Gabriel, you know, working with the younger wide receivers. I mean, last week when Tyler Croft, the Bills tight end, caught the game-winning touchdown versus the Rams, Stephon Diggs was the first one next to him on the field just elated and celebrating with him. I mean, there's just no sense of selfishness or divaness that we've seen at all in Buffalo so far. Granted, they're 3-0 and things are going really well, and a lot of times you don't see any negativity when things are going well, but he's just really been above and beyond both on the field and off it to this point. So I can't imagine anyone in this franchise, especially Josh Allen, you know, he's had nothing but great things to say about Diggs, and, you know, the fact that Diggs has just really been unselfish in every regard. So the trade has certainly worked out very well for the Bills so far.
Talking with Brad Gilbert from the Bills Wire. Brad, when we come back from break, I want to delve into the Bills offensive line and preview the defense. You are listening to the FPC Raiders podcast on the Full Press Coverage Radio Network. We are back with the FPC Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Brad Gilbert of the Bills Wire. Brad, when you look at that Bills offensive line, they have crafted themselves a very physical, very downhill blocking team. You have Deion Dawkins, who guy out of Temple that I remember playing the right side. He is now your entrenched left tackle. You have Cody Ford from Oklahoma, Mitch Morris, the Missouri son who played with the Chiefs. You bring in Quentin Spain from the Titans, I think, and Daryl Williams from the Panthers. How much does that offense, as far as the ability to assert their will and give Josh Allen time to find a deep pass? Because I read a stat where he has a 152.1 pass rating on deep throws, which is, I think, tops in the league. Behind that mammoth offensive line, and they get downhill, how do you think they will fare against a defensive line that has struggled to pretty much provide less than 5 sacks in 3 games for the Raiders. Actually, they have 3. Max Crosby has 2. Maurice Hurst has 1.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that they've really worked on this organization to solidify with Josh since Josh came in a few years ago. As I mentioned earlier, the offensive line was in really bad shape when Josh got here, when he was drafted, and they've spent some big money on a guy like Mitch Morse, who you know, was one of the highest paid centers in the league when they signed him away from the Chiefs. And that was kind of anchoring, you know, that offensive line next to a guy like Deion Dawkins, who got a very big payday a few weeks ago here, and is that franchise left tackle now. And they just continued to bring in guys. They drafted Cody Ford a couple years ago. He's moved around a little bit on the offensive line. They've tried to find where he fits better. Is it at guard? Is it at tackle? He's versatile in that he's learned both positions, and depending on who's available, if there's injuries, things of that nature, he can slide around. You know, Darrell Williams was added this year, as you said, and he's played pretty well so far in the season. The one guy that's been a little surprising, who was very solid for them last year, was Quentin Spain. He actually, kind of surprisingly last game, was taken out of the starting rotation. And a guy they signed in the offseason, Brian Winters from the Jets, he played, he started last game and was not good at all. And so I'm not quite sure what the reasoning was. We still haven't really gotten a straight answer, other than Sean McDermott said he evaluates each week who the best guys for that matchup are. It seems like maybe there's something more to it there with Quentin Spain, because he was very solid for them last year, didn't allow a sack all season. And so there's been some kind of rumblings. John Feliciano, by the way, the former Raider, obviously you guys are familiar with him there. He was on IR with a pectoral injury in the off season. He's eligible to return this week, but have not heard anything about him even practicing yet. So I don't think he'll be back quite yet. But there has been some talk, once he is healthy and able to return, at that point, do they maybe look to trade a guy like Quentin Spain and get something back for him to a team that needs help on the offensive line? But overall, as you said, they have been really solid. They've given Josh a ton of time in the pocket. There's times where it just looks like Josh has a day and a half to throw the ball, which certainly helps, you know, in accuracy and downfield completions when you have the time. Last week versus the Rams was really the first time in the second half when the Bills gave away that big lead that I've seen Josh look uncomfortable in the pocket this season. Granted, they were able to, you know, turn it around and get the win, but that was really the first time all year where I saw kind of the pocket breakdown and Josh just not making great decisions at times. But yeah, I mean, 2.5 out of the 3 games, the offensive line has looked really good. And as you said, for a Raiders team that struggled to apply pressure to the quarterback, even if the offensive line does break down a little bit for the Bills, as we've already talked about, Josh is one of the most mobile, you know, quarterbacks in the league. So him taking sacks isn't something we see too often. So, yeah, it'll certainly present a challenge for that Raiders defensive front to actually get to Josh Allen.
We're here with Brett Gelber from the Bills Wire. Brett, when you switch over to that Bills defense, they are they're an interesting bunch, because in the middle you have Ed Oliver. Ed Oliver with the 10th pick in the draft, and if you have heard any Raiders fan who has watched him when he played at the University of Houston, they lament not picking Ed Oliver, and they chose a guy with the 4th pick in the draft who has 3.5 career sacks in 17 games. So it's one of those things that Ed Oliver is a difference maker. What does he bring to the middle of that defense?
Yeah, I just remember even watching that draft, and I remember when Farrell was drafted by the Raiders, it just threw everything into, you know, a tizzy at that point, because it just, everyone's projected picks were all messed up because no one saw him going that high. And I remember, you know, the Bills, there had been talk of them possibly moving up to try to get Ed Oliver, and then he fell into their lap where they were picking anyways. And I just remember how excited Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott were, how the, you know, his teammates, how the fans here were just you know, beside themselves, they were able to land at Oliver where they did in the draft. And I think it certainly gave him a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Not that he needed it really, but just with all the talent he brings. I remember the thing hearing with him is he too undersized, you know, to be able to play as high of a level in the NFL. And to be honest with you, there was a little bit of an adjustment for him. He did not start at defensive tackle last season right away. At the time, the Bills had Jordan Phillips, who now plays for the Cardinals, and he was alongside Star Latulale, who is now who was one of the only two Bills players to take the COVID-19 opt-out. So Star is not playing this season. But at the time, it kind of gave Ed Oliver a chance to work behind some, you know, NFL veterans. And he certainly rotated in. The Bills have quite a bit of a rotation on the defensive line there, especially this season. But, you know, at the time, I think for where he was drafted, people thought, oh, Ed's just going to come in and be a starter off the bat. But with kind of how deep the Bills' defense was already last season, he didn't need to. And I think maybe that helped his game even more. But, yeah, this year he's looked great. He's just really come out and taken hold of that defensive tackle spot, starting spot there. And the Bills' defensive line, though, you know, I'm sure you'll ask me a little more about that, but they just have a deep rotation, even with Starr taking the opt-out and losing Jordan Phillips and Shaq Lawson, who went to the Miami Dolphins. They brought in some free agents and also drafted in the second round this year A.J. Epenesa, a defensive end, who's kind of similarly to Ed, was actually inactive for the Bills' regular season opener this year versus the Jets, and played a little bit more. He was active the second and third game, so he started to work in more and had his first career sack last week on Jared Goff. So he's starting to kind of come into his own a little bit as well. But, yeah, there's a lot of depth on this Bills defense, especially on the defensive line, and I think that's been a good thing for Ed Oliver this far.
When you look at their defensive ends, Jerry Hughes has been in Buffalo for 8 years. It seems like he's been there a while, but 8 years is a long time, and he's still active. He may not have a sack this year, but his presence and the fact that he still has that motor is just remarkable. And you mentioned they're bringing in guys like Amario Addison from the Panthers. What does his speed aspect, because chances are he'll face someone in a Colton Miller who struggled early to start his career, but has started to craft himself into a above average left tackle. When you see someone with the speed of Addison in that first step, do you see the Bills defensive line being able to assert their will on the Raiders offensive line, or do you see it being kind of a wash?
Yeah, you know, that's something that the Bills have talked a lot about this week, and Sean McDermott's talked about, because as I kind of mentioned previously, their defense has not played up to par. They've really struggled actually at stopping the run, especially up the middle. And I know they're facing a very talented running back in Jacobs this week. So even in the short passing game, they've just had issues in the middle of the field there. They did lose two of their starting linebackers who are huge parts of this defense in Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds in the second game versus the Dolphins. Both those guys were able to play last week, but not 100%. But, yeah, they just struggled quite a bit, and something Sean McDermott talked a lot about is gap integrity, which we heard that thrown around a ton last season when the defense had some struggles stopping the run. So for as good as this Bills defense has been overall, and the numbers have shown that, and you may hear that if you're a fan of the NFL, just you're used to the Bills defense being good under Sean McDermott, they have, though, consistently struggled stopping the run. So I think that this game is going to be interesting because obviously the Raiders have a very big offensive line. We've heard a lot about that this week, how some of the Bills defensive tackles are going to have to be on their game facing some of these interior linemen that are just big guys. But yeah, as you said, Jerry Hughes is kind of just a freak of nature, how long he's been able to stay at kind of the top of his game, still makes his impact, you know, felt. And I think he's been a a guy that's just has so much experience and knowledge of the game that he's able to teach some of the younger guys on this defensive line, especially a guy like AJ Epenesa that they just drafted. But Mario Addison has been a really nice complement to, you know, replace Shaq Lawson there. I think it's been kind of an easy transition bringing him in. Sean McDermott's familiar with him, obviously, from his time in Carolina. So I think it's just been a smooth transition. And then they also have Trent Murphy, who's a guy that's been around for a while with the Bills, who's had his up and down, but is certainly a productive enough tight or defensive end when they need him. They have just, you know, they have really a complement of defensive ends that they can deploy at different times. And it'll be interesting to see if they're able to, match up against the Raiders offensive line.
When we come back from break, I want to discuss Sean McDermott, the secondary, and the influence of Sean McDermott's mentor. You are listening to the FPC Raiders podcast on the Full Press Coverage Radio Network. We are back with the FPC Radio's podcast. Terrence Biggs, right there from Bills Wire. Brad, Sean McDermott, when the Bills hired him, it's funny because football is, as we know, cyclical. It is one of those things that there are various coaching trees. And Sean McDermott, when he was in Philadelphia, had the privilege of coaching under one of the most underrated defensive minds that you will find in the late Jim Johnson. How do you see McDermott's defensive scheme as being a, not so much a tribute, but a model for what Jim Johnson preached, and how has McDermott changed a few things to kind of make the Bills defense his own?
Yeah, that's, you know, as you said, kind of from that coaching tree. And then another guy he, you know, attributes a lot of his success to his coaching under Andy Reid as well, who, you know, is a different coach in his own regard. But yeah, I think Sean's taken a lot of what he's learned under various mentors. Ron Rivera is another one. So he's coached with some, you know, some really kind of top name coaches through his time. But I think for Sean, the thing is, when he arrived in Buffalo, there was a lot of people perhaps that weren't super familiar with him, or he wasn't kind of that sexy name. I know a lot of teams were looking for that next Sean McVay, that, you know, offensive guru, the young, innovative coach. And Sean McDermott, while he was a younger coach, was, you know, as I said already, it's defense. So not really, you know, that as attractive maybe to some fans or to, you know, some teams around the league in terms of what they were looking to build. But I think the thing Sean learned early on was kind of how to build his staff and construct this defense to, you know, get the best out of what his players offered. So for the Bills, you know, prior to McDermott, they had Rex Ryan here as their head coach, and that was coming off of a weird situation where Doug Marrone took an opt-out and left the team kind of high and dry. And then they had Rex Ryan. And basically under Marrone, they had Jim Schwartz as their defensive coordinator and were one of the top defensive units in the league. 4-3 defense, just super aggressive, had one of the highest sack totals in the league. Rex Ryan came in and basically just said, all right, we're going to do the defense my way, even though he didn't really have the right personnel to do that, and switched them into a 3-4 defense. And the Bills suffered from it. I mean, they struggled a lot under Rex Ryan on defense when he was supposed to be, you know, this defensive mastermind type of coach, and things just fell off the track there badly. So I think when Sean McDermott got here, one of the things he did was say, all right, him and Brandon Bean arrived a short time after. That's been a really tight duo, and they're always on the same page. They obviously know each other from their time in Carolina prior. But they're just so in sync, and that's not something we saw at all in the prior, you know, coach and GM relationship when Doug Whaley was here. So that's been really nice just to have them on the same page, because that allows the GM to say, all right, I know the players that we need to get to fit what they're building on the coach's side of things. And that's exactly what they've done in the 3 years. They've brought in, whether it's on the defensive side or the offensive side, they've built this team. They had to make some really difficult decisions because they had to get the cap under control and they had to figure out the money situation. So, you know, getting rid of guys like Sammy Watkins was, you know, I remember that was one of the early moves they made. And he, obviously the Bills had moved up to get him in the first round, and that was kind of a failed venture here in Buffalo. There was just some big names that they had to move out in order to, you know, as Sean says all the time, it's become kind of a joke or a kind of a funny thing here, and trust the process is kind of Sean McDermott's his saying here, and Bills fans had to trust the process for a bit. I mean, yes, they made the playoffs that first season with Sean as the head coach when Tyrod Taylor was their starting quarterback, and they squeaked in at 9-7. But that second year, Josh's rookie year, they missed the playoffs, and things just, they had to kind of tear the team down to build it back up again. So now they're kind of seeing, you know, the fruit of that here now with the way this Bills team is built and the cap situation they're in now, and the way they're able to go out and trade for a guy like Stephon Diggs because they have the money situation under control. But I think Sean McDermott's really been able to take the philosophies he was, you know, he learned from coming into the league and building up his resume, and now he's just been able to deploy kind of the way he likes to do things with the right players, and that's made all the difference right now.
Now, when we look forward to the Bills secondary, you can make the argument, Brad, that the Bills have the best secondary in the AFC. There is no weakness between Poyer, Hyde, White, and Levi Wallace. I want to talk about Levi Wallace first, because when you look at, if you're a draft follower and a draft Nick and a member of draft Twitter or social media, Alabama has earned a reputation for producing quality cornerbacks, defensive backs. Yet Levi Wallace's name kind of slipped from memory, but when he started last year, that was his first year starting multiple games, and it seems like he has grown into his position. He's facing a Raiders wide receiving core that will probably be missing Henry Ruggs and Bryan Edwards. So they'll be facing a steady diet of, believe it or not, Zay Jones, ex-Bill, Hunter Renfrow. What have you seen in Wallace's progression that gives you the belief that he is nowhere near his ceiling?
Yeah, that's certainly a good point, and a lot of people in Buffalo feel that this secondary is underrated a lot. You don't hear a ton about Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, even though they are two of, you know, the best, I would say one of the best safety duos in the league, but just extremely solid. And we all know about Tre'Davious White, and finally got his payday recently for that. But as you said, that cornerback two position is probably the most, I guess, the weakest spot in that secondary. And look, Levi Wallace came in as an undrafted player, even though he was coming out of Alabama. The Bills were able to sign him as an undrafted free agent. And I think they were surprised at how quickly he was able to kind of take over that starting role. This offseason, they did sign Josh Norman, who, you know, many people would be familiar with, just, you know, former Redskin and some of his, you know, other stops along the way, Carolina and things like that. But he's kind of taken a regression as he's, you know, gotten older and looking to kind of rejuvenate his career here in Buffalo, playing under Sean McDermott, who he had his most success with when he was with the Panthers. And Josh got hurt in the preseason or, you know, training camp and has been on IR. So this is actually his first week. He's eligible to return as well. He is practicing. Yesterday he was practicing with the team. There's been no word if they're going to move him to the active roster yet. So not sure yet if he'll be active for the game versus the Raiders. But Levi Wallace, to be honest with you, had a strong year last year, but he really struggled the first two games of the year most notably the second game versus the Dolphins. Ryan Fitzpatrick was absolutely targeting and picking Levi Wallace apart in that game, to the point where at one point Wallace was kind of taken out of the game, and Saron Neal, who is a safety slash nickel corner hybrid bigger guy, was basically thrown in on the outside there because Josh Norman was hurt and they didn't have any other option to kind of just stop the bleeding for a little bit and let Levi kind of catch his breath. Levi bounced back last game, though, and had a really nice game. He actually picked off Jared Goff on a really nice play where he kind of jumped the ball and anticipated it. So, Levi is a really interesting player. I don't think he really gets a ton of respect and has had an up-and-down career this far, but anytime you're playing across a guy like Tre'Davious White, Leslie Frazier, who's the Bills' defensive coordinator, makes this point a lot, you're going to get a lot of work. You're going to see a lot of targets because teams do not want to throw at Tre'Davious. So Levi Wallace or Josh Norman, whoever that cornerback two is going to be seeing a heavy dose of the football. So you just have to make plays and you have to step up. And he's done that overall. Just had a bit of a tough start to the season here to start with. So it'll be interesting to see, though, once Josh Norman is healthy, what they do there. If Levi continues to start, or if they decide to give Norman, that starting role, or if they split it in a sense. So Bills will have some decisions to make once they have the full complement of guys available there.
We're talking to Brad Gelber from the Bills Wire. Brad, if you take the football component and you expand it to just the region around the Bills Mafia and the fan base, and just in general, as someone who has covered the Bills, and just in general up in that area, how annoyed do Bills fans, folks in West New York, get when people really forget that the Jets and Giants haven't played in New York in the longest minute?
Yeah, it's become, a funny kind of point of contention here. People, Josh Allen, most notably last season, the Bills went 2-0 and, they played the Jets and Giants in back-to-back weeks to start the year last year in New Jersey there. And Josh Allen had a kind of a humorous press conference afterwards where he cut off a reporter and they had said something about, do you feel that the Bills are the best team in New York? And he corrected the reporter and said, we're the only team in New York. And that kind of made its rounds on social media and then, the media in general. And so it's just become kind of since then, every time you see, ESPN or some other major outlet post something about, the New York teams or whatnot, Bills fans are just immediately all over, well, there really is only one New York team. So, yes, geographically that's true. Obviously people associate the Jets and the Giants with New York City. But, it's one of those things. Obviously Buffalo is in Western New York and we're, about a 7-hour drive from the city, so complete other side of a big state there, so people tend to sometimes not associate Western New York with what they think of as quote-unquote New York and being New York City. But yeah, Bills fans for sure and the Bills Mafia take that personally and are always rearing and willing to remind people that technically the Bills are the only NFL team in New York State.
Now, last question, spinning off of that, what is the biggest, or the bigger, I should say, bone of contention that a Buffalo sports fan has? The stars in the crease during the Stanley Cup playoffs, or the possible forward pass that led to the Music City Miracle? Which one is the bigger bone of contention up there?
Yeah, that's tough. Obviously, we've had our share of misfortune here in Buffalo and sports, not to mention the four Super Bowl losses in a row and Scott Norwood's wide right field goal kick. But I would go with the Music City Miracle just because on a overall, that football is still just a bigger sport than hockey, even though people love hockey here. And I think the fact that you look at, even if the Sabres had won that game, they weren't going to win the Stanley Cup that night. They still would have had to pull out, another win after that. So I think the Bills fans felt that year that they really deserved to move on and felt that team had some potential to make some noise in the playoffs. So the fact it was, ripped away from them on such a, that's the other thing. I mean, a goal is a goal in hockey. It's a pretty conventional play. For it to be, this miracle, as they call it, at the end of the game where, we don't ever see those work. I mean, you don't ever see guys when they start lateraling the ball and there's no time left on the clock. It's basically just assume the game's over. So for that to happen and happen in the fashion it did, I think that'll always sting a little more for the Bills Mafia here in Buffalo than anything else.
Now, Brad, where can people read your work and where can they interact with you on social media?
Yeah, so my writing's done over at BillsWire.USAToday.com. It's part of the USA Today Sports Network there, so that's where my writing is. And then you can find me on Twitter at Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y, Gelber, G-E-L-B-E-R. A lot of Bills content, but if you're looking for the other side of the game this weekend, that's where you can find me.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Brad. It has been a pleasure. I learned a lot. If folks want to read Brad, like he said, you can follow him at Bills Wire. You can follow him on all his social media. This has been another episode of the FPC Raiders podcast. Thank you for listening. Be good to yourselves and be good to each other.